Thank you. Please be seated.
Good morning and welcome to the February session of the Nebraska Court of Appeals. My name is Frankie Moore. I'm your presiding judge this morning. And to my right is Judge Dave Arterburn. And to my left is Judge Larry Welch. We have two cases on the call this morning. The first one, I understand, Appellee Counsel is appearing via WebEx. Mr. Hotz, are you able to hear us and see us okay?
I can see you and hear you, Judge. Thank you.
Okay, and we can as well with you, so thank you. So the first case this morning is Gonerman versus Swan. You may approach. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mr. Hotz. My name is Jane Langenmach with the Rembolt Ludtke Law Firm, and I have the privilege today of representing the appellant, Gwen Swan, who's now known as Gwen Gonerman.
And Ms. Langenmach, if you're comfortable, you may remove your mask to present your argument.
Thank you. I would appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honors, there are basically two principal questions before you today. The first is, in the context of a modification of alimony, what are the factors that constitute good cause? I would submit that under the existing case law, those factors are a change in income and the general equities of the situation. The second issue before you today is in that same context of a modification of alimony. What does it mean for something to be foreseeable? And by whom must it have been foreseeable? The facts in this case, in the modification case, were principally undisputed. There was a heavily contested divorce trial back in 2010. Judge Steinke tried that case, and there were a number of issues. Essentially, all issues were tried. But the issues that are relevant for today's purposes were the business valuation and the determination of alimony for Ms. Gonerman. The business valuation itself, of course, is not before this court. That's been determined. But the language in the court's decree regarding the business valuation are relevant to determine whether or not there's been a material change in circumstances. At the time of trial in 2010, there was, again, a dispute about the party's income and their earning capacities. At that time, the income for Mr. Swan was approximately $200,000 per year. And there were a number of disputes about the way books were kept. There was alleged fraud in some things. There were certainly some improper deductions, and all of that was litigated. But one of the principal disputes had to do with a cashway job, and some other Panel Tech was one and National Beef was one. There were some significant income coming into Ultimate Thermal, which was the party's company. And both Mr. Swan and his accountant testified that those were one-time spikes in income and that the court should make an adjustment because he predicted, Mr. Swan predicted, that he would not have that level of income in the future.
Did your client present contradictory testimony to that, though, at the trial?
I mean, I wouldn't say it was contradictory testimony. The testimony that's relied on, both by Judge Sampson in this order and by Mr. Swan, is Ms. Swan at that time was asked, what do you think Mr. Swan's earning potential is, or what his potential is? And she said, I think his potential is basically unlimited. Mm-hmm. And she clarified that at the modification trial, that what she meant was, he's a very good businessman. He could do lots of things. I would not submit to the court that no one could have foreseen that his income would be anything other than $200,000. That's not what I'm suggesting. But under the interpretation presented by Mr. Swan and under the ruling by Judge Sampson, Mr. Swan could have walked out of that trial after convincing the court that there was a one-time spike in income. And his testimony was, I guarantee the spike is over. He could have walked out and 2 months later started earning $20 million a year. And under this theory, that couldn't be a material change in circumstances simply because a non-attorney, non-expert, out-spouse litigant testified that she thought there was a dispute in earning capacity. And if you think about it, this makes a really bad precedent for the court. We had a number of years under the Desjardins line of cases where attorneys were advising people, you have to be careful about making a settlement agreement regarding alimony because it'll be so hard to modify. And now if this is the interpretation, if there's just a litigated dispute about a party's income and earning potential, if that means that a 700%, 900% increase in income is deemed foreseeable, then people won't be able to try cases either. You'll only be able to have a trial if you already agree on the facts and all the future facts. In determining this issue about what's foreseeable, this court issued an order just yesterday. It was a different case. It was a child support case. But in Buderus versus Buderus, this court said yesterday that a decree awarding child support will not be modified because of a change in circumstances, which was in the contemplation of the parties at the time the original or preceding order was made, but only those anticipated changes which were specifically noted on the record at the time the previous order was entered will prevent modification.
But wasn't the evidence in that case that that his income really hadn't changed?
That's true. But so back to the question number one that I posed, what does it mean to say that alimony can be modified for good cause? The statute allows modification of alimony for good cause. I would submit that under all of this court and all of the Supreme Court's prior case law, those factors are a change in income, which of course didn't exist in that Buderus case that we're talking about, but a change in income is one factor, and the general equities of the situation are the other factor.
Ms. Langenmach, does that ignore the case law that talks about what the purpose of alimony is, that the purpose of alimony is to provide some temporary income to allow that person being supported to reestablish themselves? Aren't you ignoring that?
I don't think I am ignoring that. I understand that a purpose of alimony, there are multiple purposes of alimony. A purpose of alimony is to provide support for people for a period of time. And we did ask that the alimony order here be extended, and that's partly because the request, the petition for modification was filed in December of 2019 when the alimony would have run out a year later. Even if you didn't change the term, even if you considered the period of time to still be the 10 years, the court could have and should have awarded alimony at least retroactively to the time of filing. When we have evidence, as we do here, of one party's income increasing almost immediately after the decree and continuing to increase, and again, as I said, as of 2018, it was almost a 900% increase from the time of trial. When you have those circumstances, and there's also evidence of fraud and gross inequity. Now, I think the Grothin case made clear that fraud and gross inequity are not the standard, but it is important when you review this record that there is evidence of fraud and there is evidence of gross inequity. And so when you consider that the standards for good cause are a change in income.
Are you saying there was evidence of fraud in the modification trial?
There was. There was evidence of fraud at the original trial as well. But if, for example, in Mr. Swan's brief, he tries to argue that we were relitigating the original divorce, which is not at all the case. There was fraud in the original divorce. And I think when we ask a court, particularly if we're asking a trial judge, a modification judge who is not the same judge as our trial judge, it's important for them to understand all of the facts. But what we were actually talking about here is the difference between income is not just the difference in income that's shown on the tax return, because there are still bookkeeping practices going on that show that Mr. Swan's income is actually more than what he reported. Now, again, whether you go from 700 to 900%, and you know, if he hadn't improperly deducted the cars or given a car to his girlfriend who doesn't really work for the company, you know, maybe it would have been 906%, right? I don't know if the math would have made a huge difference. But it, number one, it goes to the fact that his income is still underreported. Two, it shows there's an even bigger difference in income than the tax returns would show. And it also goes to the credibility of the witness. We didn't have a lot of disputed facts at trial, but as I said, to the extent facts are disputed, I don't think Mr. Swan should be afforded any credibility given the way that he reports this. And I don't think it's appropriate for him to try to commit fraud on the court.
What part of, or how much do we weigh what the original trial court's impression was of the party's ability to increase their income? You've talked about what the parties testified to as to what they expected, but the first trial court made findings in that regard. Don't we have to look at what that court said?
I think you absolutely have to look at what that court said, and that's why I've cited the language. I don't think you can look only at the alimony paragraphs of the decree and determine it. I think you have to look at the business valuation paragraphs of the decree to determine it. And when I ask, by whom must it have been foreseeable, I would submit the question is, was it foreseeable to the court? Mm-hmm. Judge Stankey agreed and adjusted the business valuation. He agreed with the presentation by Mr. Swan and his accountant that that was a one-time spike, that the spike was over. And so to compensate for that, although again, it's not in the alimony section, to compensate for that, what he did is in the business valuation, he adjusted the income of the company for the average to show that, or to compensate for the fact that he believed it would be improper to wait those most recent years because he determined that was a spike in income. That $200,000 average was intended to take out the fact that there was a spike right before the divorce, but that spike compares nothing to the spike that has occurred since the divorce.
But Judge Steinke also made findings about the income and that Curtis would enjoy the profitability of the successful enterprise, including annual salary and generous shareholder advances. So to me, that seems like contemplation that his income would increase.
And as I said, if his income had gone up 10% or 20%, that may or may not have made a difference. And that's why this is an equitable argument, right? The alimony is one of the circumstances where we don't just check a bunch of boxes. It's not like child support where you plug in numbers and it spits something out. We have to consider all the equities of the situation. Is it foreseeable that his income might not always be exactly $200,000? Of course. Was it foreseeable to anyone that it would have gone up 900%? I would submit it was not. I see that I'm out of time. Are there other questions? We ask that you reverse. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is the appellee ready?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Edward Hutz. I represented Kurt Swan at the original trial, and I represented him at the modification trial. Ms. Langenmach is correct that original trial was contested in almost every issue, if not every issue. But two things came out of that trial as reflected in Judge Steinke's decree. The first one was that Judge Steinke recognized that when he awarded all of the stock in Ultima Thermal, which was a business that the Swans started, that he would enjoy the profitability of that business and the have responsibility for the direction of that business and the success of that business. Secondly, Mrs. Swan at that time testified at trial, and if you look at my cross-examination of her at the modification trial, she testified under questioning by Ms. Langenmach. What do you think your husband's earning potential is? And she gave him a lot of accolades about being a good businessman and basically said, if he keeps his mind on the business, his potential is unlimited. The second thing that came out of that trial was that during the trial, Mrs. Swan, now Ms. Gonerman, testified that she did not want the home that the parties lived in Washington County, that it was on an acreage that was too big, that it had a pool that was too expensive, that she could not afford and did not want to afford that house. Between the end of the trial and the submission of the case, she changed her mind and requested the court to award the house to her, which the court did. Ms. Gonerman continued to live in that house and lived in it through the modification trial. Although it's not in the record, I understand the house has since been sold, but that's irrelevant to these proceedings. But Judge Sampson noted when analyzing this issue in his April 2021 order that Ms. Gonerman's expenses actually went down between the claimed expenses in 2010 and the expenses that she testified about in 2020 or 2021. But he also said that in those expenses, about $3,000 were related to the house. So those expenses were voluntary expenses. And Ms. Gonerman, although she claims that the basis of her modification is to that she had higher expenses, the evidence just doesn't prove that. As Ms. Langenmach's argument reflects and her brief reflects, Ms. Gonerman's real complaint here is that the alimony award in the original decree was not sufficient to meet her then expenses. And in my cross-examination of her in the modification trial, she admits that. She admits that she was unhappy that the original award of alimony did not meet her expenses at that time. I would suggest that her redress or her ability to question that was for her to appeal that decree, but she did not. So I believe it was clear that Mr. Swan's success was contemplated by both the court, Judge Steinke, and Ms. Gonerman.
So, Mr. Hutz, if the income did increase by 900%, was that contemplated at the time of the decree?
Well, first of all, Judge, I'm not sure that the 2010 money is the same as 2020 money, but and I'm not sure about that 900%. Mr. Swan's, there was a lot of testimony at the trial about what personal expenses were used to, or what company money was used to pay personal expenses. There was an issue about a diversion of $80,000 that was all accounted for, and Ms. Mock and Mrs. Swan presented a lot of testimony about personal expenses being paid by the company, about the diversion of money not being accounted for, and Judge Steinke built that into the valuation. Now, I'm not sure when you have a company in the construction business that is solely owned by one person that you can contemplate whether your business is going to go up or down, or how high it's going to go up, or whether you're going to go broke. So I don't think anything was contemplated other than the fact that Mr. Swan had this business that he was going to run, and it was going to be profitable like it had been in the past. But some percentage, there was no discussion of some percentage or some, you know, if you do this much better, you're going to have to pay more money.
If it can't be contemplated, though, I mean, isn't the language that we look at for modifications, if it's not in the contemplation of the parties or not in the contemplation of the court, then that's a material change. So if it's not contemplated, are you conceding that there's a material change?
I am not conceding there's a material change. I would also suggest that, and I haven't done any empirical studies on this, but Mrs. Gonerman was awarded 10 years of alimony, about a total of about $700,000. I have not seen an award of alimony, except perhaps in a rare case of permanent disability, that is more than 10 years. So the purpose of alimony, which is to rehabilitate the party receiving it so they can get on their feet and maybe improve their lifestyle, has been satisfied. And Mr. Swan satisfied all of the obligations of the decree. And I just do not believe that there's any basis or good cause to modify alimony, as Mrs. Gonerman suggests. She suggests an extension of alimony to her age 70, which would have extended it another 11 or 12 years. I just don't think there's any legal or factual basis to do that. So we would request that Judge Sampson's order be affirmed. If there are any more questions, I still have a little time.
We have no further questions.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Hotz.
Thanks for letting me.
Your case is submitted and you are excused.
Thank you. You
can go out the side door. I don't think we have anybody waiting in the back, but that's sort of been our protocol during these times. So thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Hotz.
Thank you.